We're here at Worship God West. It's an incredible joy. Thank you for faithfully supporting your husbands who are serving on teams, going to the church meetings time and time again by yourselves with all your kids in tow. I know that really, really well. Thank you for serving on teams and exercising your gifts for the glory of God. And I pray that this conference is just a refreshing time, a time when God just gets bigger in your eyes and more glorious. So excited. Tell you a little bit about me. Grew up in a non-Christian home, and in a discussion with a friend in high school, found out that Easter wasn't about Easter rabbits. And it was just this moment of, are you kidding me? I had never heard about Jesus, had no concept of what Easter was, and she invited me to her church and talk about my eyes getting big. I was just like, oh my goodness, like, there is a God, and he died for me, and I'm sinful, and just all those remarkable truths rocked my world. That was in 1972, and my life has never been the same since. Bob and I were married. I'm married to Bob, who was announcing stuff. We were married in 1976, and he was part of a band called GLAAD. It's a contemporary Christian. Most of you guys are probably too young to even have heard of them. But so we traveled full-time for 8 years, and I mixed sound on the road for those 8 years. I kind of learned along the way. You know, we started with a few channels, and then we get a new piece of equipment, and I learned that part. So I've probably been mixing sound for 35 years now. So it's one of those gifts that just keeps on giving that you wish would kind of not. It's really awkward. Is anybody a sound person? It's just an awkward thing as a woman, I feel like. You know, I'm always just there, and these guys are talking all this tech stuff around me, and I'm like, well, I don't know, I just know it doesn't sound good right now. So we did that. I had two kids when we left the band, so we traveled around with two children. All the single guys would get on with their one little bag. We'd be coming in with diapers and playpens and toys and books, and it was crazy. Bob really felt called, and I felt called to give ourselves to the local church as we traveled around and sang at various churches. You just wanted to know that people were going to keep, you know, being fed and growing and being a part of all that. So we really missed that. So that's why we left the band. Been married 37 years this August. We have 6 children, ages 32 to 18. I'm about to turn 58 next month, which I just cannot even get my hand around. I mean, I'm like, 30 maybe? 50? Almost 60? Are you kidding me? So life has gone fast. We have kids that are 32 to 18, 4 girls, 2 boys. Our first 4 children are married, and we have 2 girls that are still at home with us. 12 grandkids, 13 on the way in September. They're ranging from the age of 11 to 18 months. So we just kind of experience all of life all at once. I mean, when we're all together, it is chaos. I was born in England, raised in Northern Virginia, went to college in Philadelphia and studied technical theater. After being married, we've lived in Philadelphia, Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland. And then last year, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky to plant a church there. And we are loving it. I love planting churches. It's just an amazing season in our lives. It's a time of the joy of seeing your kids passionately loving the Lord. My son Devin was leading this morning, and it's just crazy to see it all. Like, you know, it's the thing you kind of hope is going to happen when you get older, and then to see it happening, it's just like, oh my goodness, like, I'm living the dream, you know, I mean, it's just to see it all ahead of me. My kids loving their spouses, training their children, loving the local church, being in our little church plant, getting to see people come in one by one, knowing their stories, has just been amazing. I'm very blessed. But I have to admit, each season has been mixed with one with blessings and unique challenges. And God has used each of these seasons to bring back growth in me and to cause me to trust the faithful, good, sovereign, and merciful God. On our last Sunday, before we came out here, a girl shared a prophetic word on Sunday that I was like, wow, that sounds like my message. So I just wanted to share that with you and just see if anybody can relate to this. She said, I see a picture of a person in a stormy bay. You're holding on to a piling. The winds are blowing strong. The waves keep crashing on you. It's a long storm. Finally, the sky starts to clear a little, and you see the sun, and you think, maybe I can break for shore, or maybe someone will come rescue me now. Then before you can escape, you see the sky changing again, more clouds, more darkness. How much more can I take? When will this stop? Well, you think, at least I have this piling to hold on to. It will keep me safe. But even the piling is rough and jagged. It scrapes and cuts you, and it just seems to add more pain. But the piling, your ability to swim, a person to rescue you, none of these are your true salvation or your real help. Only He who calms the storms, He who keeps you, He who is your shelter, only the Lord is your true refuge. He is the one who promises to keep you and sustain you. So let me just pray. Father, thank you so much that you are a God of details. Lord, you know every single thing that goes on in our lives, the past, the present, and the future. And you are Lord of it all. Father, thank you that you love us and carefully care for us. Thank you that you're a kind, good, all-powerful, compassionate, loving God who watches over us so perfectly. Lord, thank you that we are able to be together at this conference. Thank you for all these women, Lord, who are passionate for you and desire to learn more about you. I pray that I'm able to help just a teeny bit to point them to you, the true rock and the secure one who takes care of our every need. Thank you, Lord. Amen. So I get to give away two books. I was wondering if anybody, when I read that word, like that was like, ooh, that hits a little close to home. Is anybody going through a hard time right now? Feel free. Yes? Let me give you a book. This is a book by Nancy Guthrie. Is anybody familiar with her? She is amazing. She had two children that died, and just the way that she has processed that those tragedies in her life is worth emulating. These are different things that she's, what are they called? Things that people have written that have really affected her. Anybody else? Come on, people. I hope this helps you. You're welcome. I wish I could play drums. That would be really cool, wouldn't it? Okay, God's intention is to use the changes and challenges of each season of our lives to strengthen our trust in Him. Let's face it, ladies, our lives are a little unusual as women. I think we're just live in a constant state of change. At least that's been my experience. As teens, you have hormones and you're going crazy and there's all kinds of drama. I have an 18-year-old right now. Her life's full of drama. Then I have a single girl, more hormones, more wondering, should I pursue a career? Am I going to get married? Am I even going to like the guy that God picks out for me? Am I called to be single? Will I be content? Where should I serve? How do I control my schedule? Just all those things fly around. as wives, even more change. My daughter Chelsea got married about 4 years ago, and I was just struck with, wow, this is like everything changes for her in a day. You know, all of a sudden she has a home to take care of and a husband to love and dealing with sex for the first time and entrusting her life to someone else, and serving all of a sudden becomes a way of life when you're married. Learning to communicate, resolve conflict, manage a home, love our husbands with a growing passion, fight our sin, and be a helper to this man that the Lord has given us. And then you got more hormones. But now it affects our spouse too, which is always exciting to try and get them to understand. Then become a mother, pregnancy, more hormones, nursing, new opportunities to discover our temptations to be selfish, more people to care for, more to manage, complex schedules, emotions of your kids, battles with weight gain, weight loss, weight gain, weight loss. And we're exhausted most of the time. And then as grandparents, which is, I'm kind of in the midst of that now, watching our children leave home and raise families of their own. Are they ready? Did they catch the things that I wanted them to get? Will they raise them well? And all of a sudden you're dealing with a different home and family life. Is it going to be 12 for dinner tonight, or are we only going to be two of us? You know, it's just always different. And then you have this whole area which I didn't have a clue about, caring for your aging parents. Like, that was just like, whoa. I mean, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I guess that's, I mean, we came over from England, so I never knew my grandparents and all that. So my mom moved in with us, and she developed Alzheimer's, and it was just a crazy time for us. And then you kick into menopause. That's always fun. More hormones. And then on top of just our changing circumstances, we're just emotionally volatile individuals. I mean, some of us more than others, but it's just always amazing to me how in a moment we can change from being this pleasant person to just being really irritated. We get fearful in a wink. Our minds can just go to worst case scenario, boy, without even putting much thought into it. You know, somebody, your husband's home late. He probably died in a car crash on the way home. What am I going to do? How will I support myself without a husband? What will the kids do? Will I lose the house? I mean, we're like 20 miles down the road, and it's not even based on reality. So that's us, ladies. So how do we respond to all these changes all the time? How do we become steadfast women who trust in an unchanging, faithful God? Let's briefly look at the life of Sarah and Abraham. Sarah went through many seasons and changes and challenges to her faith. And we don't even really meet her until she's 65 years old, which to me is, I think that's amazing. At 65, she was uprooted from her family and home and began to travel with their large entourage. And she remained barren through her childbearing years, way past her childbearing years. She obviously desired children. And on top of all this, God had given them this incredible promise to her husband. In Genesis 12, 1 and 2, go out from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. So she went through 50 years. Now, imagine this, guys, that 600 months of wondering, is this the month that I'm going to get pregnant? And then she has her period, 600 months. And then God went on to reiterate this promise to the childless couple two more times. See if God's word keeps coming. Still no pregnancy. 120 more months of waiting and wondering. And then I think she has kind of a faith crisis, which I think is what we tend to do. She takes matters into her own hands and comes up with this brilliant idea of giving her servant girl to her husband. This will fix it for you, God. And it doesn't really help anything and makes some things worse. A child is born, a son, but it only bears bad fruit, jealousy, anger, and heartache. And then 13 more years, 150 more months of wondering, is this the month? And God again reiterates his promise, making it clear that he will be faithful and the promise of God will be through Sarah. And then Isaac is born. Hebrews 11:11, and she bore a child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Sarah actually failed, but God remained faithful to her. So none of our failures are greater than God's faithfulness. Sarah had moments of fearing and doubting, but in the end, she considered him faithful who had promised. So we need to remember this is more about who God is than who we are. So how do we respond when our seasons and circumstances change or trials come flooding in one after another after another? How do we battle fears and unanswered questions? When are we tempted to doubt our faithful God? This is like a real burden I have for women. Like I just see that we are so movable. And God's heart for us is that through these hard things that we go through, we actually become a steadfast person. So that's what I want to get to here. As a teen, what truth do I run to when my good friend starts telling me something and I soon realize they're gossiping? Should I say something? Will she get mad at me? Will she think I'm being self-righteous? As a single, how do I fight for faith when that guy I was sure I was supposed to marry starts pursuing someone else? As a newly married, how do you respond when your husband confesses to you that he's been struggling with internet pornography? What do you think when you've finally gotten pregnant after two miscarriages and you're sitting on that examination table waiting for that sonogram where two times before there's been no heartbeat? Or say you're like me and find out that your once compliant son, Devin, who is leading there, has seemingly become evil overnight. He begins to challenge and fight your every decision. You never know if that comment you make to him is going to start World War III or if he's going to receive it. He's grumpy, angry, unaffectionate. Where's God in those moments? Or let me relate this specifically to us in the world of serving or having our husbands serve on a worship team. Suppose some new girl comes into the church and she's like this, has this killer voice, and you've always sung on the team, and all of a sudden she starts singing, and all of a sudden you realize, like, you're not singing so much anymore, and boy, everybody's talking about her and how incredible she is. Where do your thoughts go? Is God still good in that moment? Is he still blessing you? Or say your husband's getting ready for the Christmas season and you discover that he's going to have lots and lots of extra rehearsals. And you're at home with the kids, lots of nights. Where do your thoughts go then? What are the thoughts that you rehearse in your mind? He always gets to do the really fun stuff. I'm always left behind. So these past 7 years of my life have probably been the most challenging for me. As I said, my mom moved in with us. She was all there at first, and then entered into the end stages of Alzheimer's. We had four parents die. My 2-year-old grandson was diagnosed with leukemia, and my eldest daughter's marriage began to unravel before our eyes, eventually leading her to have to move in with us in the basement with her 5 children. And her husband deserted her. Our family of churches have been going through a difficult season. Trials like the waves have come relentlessly, and just when you thought it couldn't get it worse, it did. These past 7 years have definitely tested my faith. Up until then, I'd say it had a pretty totally easy life, free from severe trials. This was a big test, a day in, day out test. But it has been so good for me. I've studied and cried and studied and read and poured out my heart to God. And as a result, I believe I'm becoming a steadfast person. Not steadfast in me, but steadfast in God. I've realized that no matter what bad news or challenging circumstances come, I must fight for my view of God to not change. He is always good and faithful. No circumstance is going to change that truth. I've observed my daughter fight for faith on a daily basis as her world was turned upside down. I've seen my son be confident in his loving, caring, good father as he received the news that his son had leukemia. And I've seen godly men around me cling to God while under attack, continually proclaiming God's wonderful, unchanging gospel. God is faithful. James 1, 2 through 4. This is what I want to get to. Count it all joy, my brothers, sisters, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So how do we have the testing of our faith produce steadfastness rather than being storm-tossed? So this is just what I do. I hope it helps you. First thing I do is I remember who God is. I just rehearse the truths. Like when I feel like everything's crumbling around me, I feel like I just need to know what I really believe. You know, and I just strip down like what I believe about God. So I believe God is all-powerful. Okay, I know that. Okay, Genesis 32, 17. Ah, Lord God, it is you who have made the heavens and the earth, and by your great power and by your outstretched arm, nothing is too hard for you. When the first trials started coming 7 years ago, I just realized, boy, I've got to understand faith. And so I just started reading every book I could on faith, and it just served me so well. This is a quote from C.H. Spurgeon. The whole matter is accomplished with a word and a breath. See the magnificent ease with which God accomplishes all his purposes. If you and I have a great thing to do, what puffing and panting, what straining and tugging there must be. It is not so with the Almighty One. Here is our world spinning round every day in 24 hours, and yet it does not so much make a noise as a spinning top. If I enter a factory, I hear a deafening din, but God's great wheels revolve without noise or friction. All the divine work is simply, easily, and beautifully managed. So I've got to hang on to that. God is all-powerful. The next thing I hang on to is God is all-knowing. Psalm 139:1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. God is faithful, steadfast, and good. Psalm 117:2. For great is his steadfast love toward us, and the faithfulness of God endures forever. Praise the Lord. One Sunday we were singing that song, Come Thou Fount, and we got to verse 3. I felt like God spoke specifically to me in that moment. The verse is, Oh, to grace, how great a debtor daily I'm constrained to be. Let thy goodness, like a fetter, bind my wandering heart to thee. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, O take and seal it. Seal it for thy courts above. And I just felt like this was the Lord. That line, let thy goodness like a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee. Like the definition of a fetter is a chain or a shackle to our ankles or our feet. Something that serves to restrict a restraint. And I realize that meditating on God's goodness is the truth that will keep me steadfast. That seems to be what God is always after in me. Do I really believe he is good? Is this my fetter? Is this my restraint? Does this restrain my wandering thoughts in this circumstance? And Spurgeon says again, he will do us good, real good, lasting good, only good, every good. He will make us good, and this is to do us good to the highest degree. God is compassionate. 1 Peter 5:7. Casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. He cares specifically for us. As I prayed earlier, he's a God of details. He knows everything. He cares when your 6 month gets up for the third time at night and you're exhausted. He cares when your high school friend stops talking to you because you spoke up for the Lord. He cares when your husband's affections seem to be waning. He cares when your teens are rebelling against you. He cares when yet another friend is so excited that she's getting married and you're not. He cares when it seems that your musical gifts don't seem to be being used like you think they should. He cares when your husband is at a rehearsal again and you're home alone again. Our God cares for us. So when we experience trials and changing circumstances, I must rehearse these truths about who God is. I can tend to let my circumstances inform what I think about God at that moment. Like look through life through that lens. Like, whoa, all this stuff's falling apart. You know, and then I look at God and say, wow, maybe he's not able to do all this stuff. You know, rather than I've got to know what those truths are and look at life, my circumstances through that lens. That changes everything for me. Is he all-powerful? Is he good? He could put me in any situation at this moment, and, like, he's handpicked this one for me. Like, if I don't believe God's all-powerful and sovereign, then, yeah, you're just a victim of circumstances. But if you really believe those things, then you view life through that lens and think, yeah, okay, I want to catch what it is that God's up to at this moment. The second thing I do is remember God's past faithfulness. One of my aims is to cultivate grateful eyes that remember God's faithfulness in the past. God continually told the children of Israel to remember and to retell the stories of his faithfulness. Psalm 77, 11-12. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. Psalm 89:1. I will sing of the steadfast love of the Lord forever. With my mouth I will make known your faithfulness to all generations. We always have to begin with the gospel. He's taken care of our greatest need. Our sins have been forgiven. There is no greater demonstration of his love and care for us and his faithfulness than what he did at Calvary for us. So whenever we enter a particularly rough season, it's a good idea to write down what happens in the midst of it. I was just reading a book last night where it said that this woman had a jar and she had rocks in it. And every time there was a demonstration of God's faithfulness to her or some answer to prayer, they would write the circumstance on these rocks and put it in this jar. And that the kids like just loved, you know, they would get it out and just read like all the stuff. I did that. We were, like, going to move somewhere. And there was just all these things that moving is just crazy. Like, this house is going to sell at the right moment when we need to buy this house, and how's all this going to work, and you got kids and all this stuff. And so I was like, this is just miraculous that this ever works out. And it just has consistently, and I'm always just amazed. I remember I drew a picture in my journal of this path of rocks. And it was kind of like, well, and it all was like, you know, this had to happen for this to happen, for this to happen, this happened, you know, and they all had to happen in the right moments. And I just wrote on each one, you know, okay, got to sell the house, got to do this, got to do this. And like it all happened. And so I can look back at that and go, guys, look, like God was so faithful to us. when Devin, my, sorry, I keep ragging on Devin. He's fine with it. I got to tell you a funny story, though. That song, All I Have Is Christ, like, he didn't write that song. So my other son wrote the song. My other son, who, like, just was compliant and is passionate for God and has just done all the right things. So he wrote that song. So then Devin records that song. So everybody comes up to him. That song is so amazing. Could you tell me this, like, what it was like and all this stuff? And he's like, well, I actually didn't write the song. It was my brother's. So we think it's hilarious because when Devin was going through all this stuff after he, like, got converted, Bob and him went to some churches to speak about, like, what they had learned in their relationship through it. So we called it the sin tour. And so we always laugh because Devin got to go all these great places. Poor Jordan, the faithful son, remains at home, doesn't get to do anything for him. So. Anyway, when my third born, who was leading, was 13, he confessed that he'd been deceiving us. Started with, we were homeschooling. He was, you know, skipping some lessons, and I wasn't the best at accountability. but it started with that, and then it just grew, and it grew to, you know, he was like listening to all this music. We had no idea he was listening to. He had a girlfriend. We had no idea that has happened, and it just got awful. His attitudes became this dark cloud in our home. I never knew if I brought some, and Bob was traveling a lot at the time, and, you know, so him and me, I mean, we'd just get in these, like, and the good son would come in and be like, can I help you guys? It's very humbling. Anyway, like, I, you know, just, like, correct him about something, thinking it wasn't that big of a deal, you know, and all of a sudden, it would just, like, escalate into this, like, massive argument. I'd be like, well, I was just, you know, and then you have to deal with what that produced, and then that one, and it then just got bigger and bigger and bigger. So it wasn't a pleasant time for us. He was angry, unaffectionate. He wouldn't let me touch him. Just not much fun to be around. Lots of prayer, restrictions, fighting fear in my heart. I never could believe that he didn't just run away. I mean, he was so miserable. I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, when you think of it in God's perspective, like, he was always this, like, really fearful little kid. It's kind of hard to imagine seeing now, but, and I think that fear is what kept him from running away, because he didn't know where to go and stuff like that. But I think everything in him, he would run away. So I would struggle with that fear. Like, is he still going to be around tomorrow? And just teaching me to trust God. And then he began to change. Slowly, very slowly. And I think that that slowness was mostly for me more than it was for him. I just had so many Sunday meetings when I'd, you know, the incredible message. We'd sing a song, they'd have people come down for prayer, and I'd always be, this is the one. I'm going to open my eyes, and Devin is going to be down front, sobbing, converted. It's going to be amazing. And I'd open my eyes, and he would have, like, taken off and gone out into the lobby, which he wasn't supposed to do. but it was great, because I needed to learn that this was all about God doing something. And it wasn't about a message that he heard or a retreat that he had been on or some mission trip that we sent him on or something helpful that I said, which I was hoped that was what it would be. But it was just God did it. And he just slowly turned that big boy around. And it was just amazing to watch. And probably one of the highlights of my life when we used to have these conferences called New Attitude. And he was after, I mean, he got converted, changed, and he was leading worship at this conference. And I just, like, looked up and I was just like, this is unbelievable. I mean, whoever would have thought, you know, that Devin
would be leading people, and like the gospel is like so real to him, and he's passionate about it, and he's like affecting people, you know, as he proclaims the gospel and stuff. It was just a great moment to remember all that God had done. Third thing I do is, so we got the, remember who God is, remember his past faithfulness, remember his promises of future grace. It's number three. Romans 8:32. He spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all. How shall he not with him freely give us all things? There's a guy named John Flavel who wrote a thing about that verse that I think is just outstanding. How is it imaginable that God should withhold after this spiritual blessings or temporal blessings from his people? How shall he not call them effectually, justify them freely, sanctify them thoroughly, and glorify them eternally? How shall he not clothe them, feed them, protect and deliver them? Surely, if he would not spare his own son one stroke, one tear, one groan, one sigh, one circumstance or misery, it can ever be imagined that ever he should, after this, deny or withhold from his people. For those sakes, all this was suffered, any mercies, any comforts, any privilege, spiritual or temporal, which is good for them. I love that. If God's already done the unimaginable, he's forgiven our sin, he's pursued us, as Craig so brilliantly was telling us this morning, in the midst of our running and rebellion, he's gazed on all of our sin, past, present, and future, and sent his only son to be crushed on our behalf so that we could be adopted as sons and daughters. And on top of that, given us a daily dose of grace to trust and obey him and declared us righteous, how will he not continue to care for us? So what things about the future tempt you? Will my kids follow the Lord? You can insert, we're good at things to tempt us. Will my kids follow the Lord? Will I ever serve on the worship team? Does God care about me? Will my children be healthy? Will my husband be faithful? Will he get a better job? Will we ever have a normal life? That was a big one for me. As a pastor's wife, I'd always be like, if we could just like have a normal life where you like came home at 5 and like then everything would be great. It's, you know what, there is no normal life. We used to always say, Bob would say, if we were like incredibly busy, he'd say, you know, this is just a really busy season. And I started saying, you know, Bob, this is just a busy life and it's not changing. So we just don't even say that anymore. I at times have feared whether I would get Alzheimer's because my mom had it. God has promised to give us grace for every situation. He has promised that he'll never leave us or forsake us. Now, if you guys can just indulge me for a minute. My daughter, Megan, who's my oldest, whose husband deserted her with her 5 kids, has a blog. And she wrote this story, so I just wanted to read it to you. Because she really taught me a lot through that trial of, watching. She had all the things she loved just like fall apart around her. And the books she read and the things that she would quote like so fed my soul in my little trials I was going through. So she's just has really affected me. So I just wanted to read this to you. And she's a great writer besides. Once upon a time, there was a boy. He grew up in a home with 4 brothers and a mother and father who modeled and encouraged trust in one true foundation that could never be shaken. The boy grew up to be a man. He was passionate and strong and kind and worked with his hands. He married, fixed up a house, and welcomed a sweet baby girl to the world. The boy was happy. Then merciless thief cancer swept in, and the boy lost his daughter, then his wife, and then his house. His world crumbled around him. His house, his work, his girls, and everything he had was gone, except for the foundation. And in the dark loneliness, that foundation held strong, though the boy felt so weak and broken. Once upon a time, there was a girl. She grew up in a home with five sisters and brothers, loved and trained by two parents whose foundation was the Lord. She grew up and got married and had five babies of her own. The girl lived in a farmhouse just like she always wanted. She sang and served and cooked and made a home, and the girl was happy. But life began to fall apart, bit by bit, then hard and fast. Every prop the girl thought she had to lean on fell, and all of a sudden, the girl found herself alone with five little people. No house, no husband, no stability. And though it felt like she had lost everything, she found one thing remained, and the foundation held strong, though the girl felt so broken and weak. The boy started a new life with a new job and a new place, and he started attending a little church, a church where it just so happened to be the little girl with five little people. One day, the boy and the girl began talking about brokenness and loss, grief and pain. And the girl was grateful to meet a fellow sufferer who had found the same truths to be strong and true. And the boy and the girl kept talking on Sundays after church. And the more they talked, the more the girl was struck by how hard the boy fought to trust the Lord, by how much he loved Jesus, and how grateful he was for salvation. The boy often said, if nothing good ever happened again, the cross was proof enough of God's goodness and love, and he would choose to believe it. The girl came away every Sunday wanting to trust God like the boy. Weeks turned into months, and the friendship grew. The boy was patient, oh so patient, as the girl worked on rebuilding her life, learning to heal and trust and praise of God. And slowly God began to do a work in that scarred, broken heart of the girl, just as he'd worked in the heart of the boy, opening her heart to faith and to want to try again. And so eventually they did. The boy set out to win the girl's heart with love notes and coffee and flowers, compliments and babysitting and house cleaning, with loving correction and hours of conversation, date nights and road trips and help in the dinnertime craziness. The girl was afraid of being hurt again, of starting over, of being vulnerable. The boy was too. But deeper than that, they both knew that God was greater than their fears, that he was loving and good, that come joy or pain, plenty or loss, should this relationship fail or succeed, God was holding them no matter what, and that he would keep them to the end. One December night, the boy asked the girl for the chance to love her for the rest of their lives, and she said yes. When I chose the name 10,000 Things for my blog, this story was one of the things I had in mind, because it is mine. When everything was lost and it seemed the light would never come again, God was working in the dark, faithful to his word, leading, guiding, providing, teaching. He wastes nothing. He is a redeemer, beauty from ashes, joy from pain. He could have brought no change to my life, and he would still be just as good. Yet instead, he chose to give me this amazing boy. I'm overwhelmed with his mercy and love, simply in awe at the glimpse into this masterful plan the author is weaving, and the story has only just begun. So my girl got married 2 weeks ago, June 8th. And she walked down the aisle. It was an outdoor wedding under these huge oak trees. And she walked down to the aisle to a Mumford and Sons song called After the Storm. There's a line in it, and love will not break your heart anymore. It was a very happy day. He's not promised that every heartbreak or trial will have a happy ending like this one does, or that we had hoped for. But he has promised to make every situation to bring about growth in our lives. We don't need to know the whys. Just read Job. I mean, I just think that's a great picture of, you know, we don't need to understand everything. It's his work of grace. And what does that work of grace often look like in our lives? How does God accomplish his purposes for our lives? There's a great quote by J.I. Packer in his amazing book, Knowing God, which I probably read 4 times during this time. Not by shielding us from assault by the world, the flesh, and the devil, nor by protecting us from burdensome and frustrating circumstances, nor yet by shielding us from troubles created by our own temperament and psychology, but rather by exposing us to all these things so as to overwhelm us with a sense of our own inadequacy, which we sure hate, and to drive us to cling to him more closely. This is the ultimate reason, from our standpoint, why God fills our lives with troubles and perplexities of one sort or another. It is to ensure that we will learn to hold him fast. God's intention is to use the changes and challenges of each season of our lives to strengthen our trust in him. So what does remembering who God is, his past faithfulness, and his promises of future grace look like from day to day? Just listening to me and hearing my sad stories won't necessarily bring change. As women, our minds are so active, and we need to have them be steadfast on the right things, to be fettered to the right things. We must rehearse the things we know to be true about God. It's important to always keep truth before us. So here are some of the ways we can do that. Application here. Number one, identify specific areas where we're failing to trust God. What is my specific temptation in this situation? Is it fear? Is it lack of trust? So often we just kind of have this like feeling, and we don't take the time to figure out, okay, what exactly is going on here? Why am I anxious in this moment? To be vigilant to maintain the spiritual disciplines, feeding our souls and realigning our thoughts through prayer, study, and meditation. As I said, when all this started, I just started reading a lot of books on faith. So here's just a few of them I wanted to recommend. It's a book, Knowing God, I would say, was the first one that I read. Just excellent. I mean, just like the truths of who God is. And then Trusting God by Jerry Bridges. It was wonderful. And then I love Martin Lloyd-Jones. He wrote a book called Spiritual Depression, which sounds kind of scary, but it is outstanding. I would recommend that everybody read that as a woman. It basically talks about the idea of that, you know, rather than listening to ourselves, we need to speak to ourselves. And he just hammers that home, which is so helpful. And he also wrote a little book called Faith on Trial, which is a meditation on Psalm 73. And then Nancy Guthrie mentioned, I passed out that book, Be Still My Soul. That was just some essays on suffering. She also has a book called Holding On to Hope, which is about the story about what she went through and what God taught her. It was a ridiculous story. I mean, she got pregnant. Was it during the pregnancy? I think she gave birth, found out that the baby would only, like, wouldn't live a year. Some rare disease. And then it ended up being genetic. So they wrestled with the idea of, like, should we do something permanent so that this doesn't happen? This has been so hard on our family and our extended family. So they finally decided, yeah, we have faith to do something. So they did something, and she got pregnant again. And so then she wrestled with all those thoughts. I mean, she does a great job. She's just a great communicator. But just wrestled with those thoughts of, oh, well, if I got pregnant, then maybe that's, you know, proof that, like, this will be a healthy baby because it's miraculous that I even got pregnant. And, you know, just wrestling through all these thoughts and stuff. Baby was born, exact same thing. And I think he lived like 1 month or 1 month shorter. And just the way she's my hero, the way she has walked through that. And she's also really good at teaching you how to relate to people that are going through hard times, you know, the things that person fears someone saying to them. And it's just really, really good. So she has another book called Hearing Jesus Speak Into Your Sorrow. I really like that one. And then this little daily devotional, which my daughter turned me on to, called Streams in the Desert by L.B. Cowman. I think they were like a missionary couple, and her husband had like serious medical issues all the time and just suffered a lot. And she just collected like quotes and poems and hymns and scripture and all this stuff and has put it into this little devotional, and it has spoken to my soul so many moments. And let's see. So, 3, engage others to help you in the process. When you're struggling, it's not the time to like try and do it on your own. You really want to have others help you and speak truth to you. And then be faithful to confess your unbelief to others. Let me finish with this. This is from Martin Lloyd-Jones, Spiritual Depression. And I love this. Faith is a refusal to panic. We're good at panicking, aren't we? Faith is a refusal to panic, come what may. Whatever your circumstances at this moment, bring all you know to be true of your relationship to God to bear upon it. Then you will know full well that he will never allow anything to happen to you that is harmful. All things work together for good to them that love God. He loves you with an everlasting love. I do not suggest that you'll be able to understand everything that is happening. You may not have a full explanation of it, but you will know for certain that God is not unconcerned. That is impossible. The one who has done the greatest thing of all for you must be concerned about you in everything. And though the clouds are thick and you cannot see his face, you know he is there. And more than just knowing that he's there, we know that he is working and is at work and is working for our good. So that's all. Thanks so much. Oh, please.